I can't even let it breathe anymore. I don't know what happened. I can't wait until the vocals kick in. And I'm like, oh, you got through those, what, how many bars is that? 4, 8, 16?
I like when you come in earlier, man, honestly. I think that's a good thing. Me I think too. It's good. You come in early. Get the intro out faster, though, man. I'm with Will on that.
Oh, just what we got to say. All right, the show's Papa's Basement. I'm John Papagiorgio. That's where the show's name comes from. Not a pedophile, weird sex dungeon thing. I'm joined today by Howard Flood.
Welcome, people.
With his creepy alias. That is a weird sex dungeon thing.
Yes.
That is his Dominatisse name. Show's site is inpapasbasement.com, and if you want to find us on any podcast app, just look up Papa's Basement, P-A-P-A apostrophe S. There's your intro.
Thank you.
Is that good enough for you?
That's getting tight, man. Let's get to the show, baby.
Tight as a nun. Tight as a nun. All right, yeah, I'll bring it down. The show can be crap for me today, I'll be honest, and it will be.
What?
There's very little prep done.
Oh, whatever. We did some.
Like 5 minutes ago.
Stop pretending like it's high school where we just acted as if we really didn't study when... I don't know about you, man. I studied. No. People always mad at me in high school because they're like, oh, it's just like, how come you do decently and you don't really work? I'm like, nah, I did some of the homework.
Why am I laughing so hard at that? I guess because we were both in smart kid classes. And so, yeah, that was like the ultimate I S'd on your hood kid, to quote ODB. Where it's like, yeah, I got a 96. And it's like, how much work did he put into that? Oh, none really. I'm just that big a genius.
Yeah.
Just naturally. Like Edgar Cayce, I slept on the book, osmosis'd it.
Yeah.
In my sleep. Dude, that I always fell for the fact you didn't study either. Because like...
Well, what I would do was I would do half the homework. I would do basically 10 to 15 minutes of homework for like math, let's say.
Yeah.
And math classes throughout high school, I'd just do enough to get a half credit on homework. And then I would just make it up on the test. So I'd try to get the A on the test, just half-ass the homework, and then I'd get a B+. And I was like, B+?
I always believed it.
Good enough, baby.
When
good
you
enough.
Said it, though, because like we're going to go down stereotype alley right now.
Yeah.
Like you were raised with just your mom in the house. So I always like pictured you coming home to like work in a coal mine or something like that. I'm like, oh, they don't have the double income. So Howard has to make money too. For like I pictured you just in a little waitress outfit, you know, like you're doing something to help the family make ends meet. So when you're like, I didn't study, I always believed it with you because like you seemed sharper than most people.
Yeah, I mean, there were times I wouldn't, but, you know, I always feel like it was exaggerated. The presentation of, like, I really didn't study was always played up a bit.
Look, the average person, I get it. They didn't go through the GT, the Gifted and Talented program. So no one really took the time to brag that they didn't study. They just didn't study.
Yeah.
It, like, when the kid that gets a D next to you is like, man, I didn't study. I just... stayed up and smoked Pall Malls watching, you know.
That was a bit of a pissing contest
Johnny
even
Carson.
In elementary school, though, wasn't it? Where
that's where
it
started.
Yeah.
All these little overachievers. Like,
where it was the battle of, I didn't just get an A. I didn't study and I got an A. Yeah.
I mean, like there were things I studied for. My mom, really, if my mom made me and she sat down and drilled me on a topic, yeah, I would study it. But if left to my own devices, I would never study. Like I have vivid memories as a kid of just chaining television shows together until I'd be like, Mom, it's too late to study. Don't you want me to get a good night of sleep?
Right.
Like, it'd be unsolved. Like, Tuesday nights, if I recall, I could watch a sitcom or so, or maybe, like, Wheel of Fortune, and then we would tie that into Rescue 911, and then, like, whatever piece of crap came on after Shatner's Rescue 911, I would do that, and then 10 o'clock rolled around, and, like, once I heard that Fox 5 10 o'clock news sound, and my mom was like, okay, you have to study. I was like, Mom, the news is on. It's too late for that now. It wouldn't even sink in. And then I would just go to bed and do nothing. Like, I didn't study until they put me on Dexedrine my sophomore year.
Yeah, you're an extreme example.
Yeah, and then I just, like, stayed up. I would sleep 5.5 hours a night. So at some point during the night, after, like, the compulsive masturbation that any amphetamine makes me engage in, like, after I was just dripped out, I was like, well, might as well crack open the geometry.
No, I mean, my plan in high school was always, I didn't study freshman year of high school just because I knew like you have to set a really low bar your freshman year because at least back then maybe it's more competitive now but in the 90s one thing they always told you in getting into college was that if you showed a trend of improving GPA each year you were more likely to get into better colleges so I was like great I'm gonna set a low bar freshman year and then half of my sophomore year I didn't work that hard I was just like let's get about the same as freshman year, and then I'm going to study the second half of sophomore year. So then second half of sophomore year, I actually like began to study. And then, yeah, with junior year, I actually worked hard junior year because I figured that was the GPA that was going to be thrown in the face of colleges. And it was my best GPA all 4 years. Was that?
I'm going to tell you a cautionary tale. Everything you said is correct. And don't forget that colleges look at that first quarter of two of your senior year like a mother effort.
I knew that.
Do you?
Because my grades plummeted those last two quarters of senior year. I didn't do horrible, but it was just like, yeah, it was definitely like my worst two quarters since freshman year.
All right. I'm going to tell you my story real fast. Right. I don't care if people are tuning out. Whatever. Go to hell.
There has to be some high school kid who listens to this.
To six listeners. Boo-hoo! Oh, my career is ruined. All right. So freshman year, I did 1 month at the Smart Kid School, Thomas Jefferson.
Thomas Jefferson High School, where Dave Grohl attended prior to it becoming the Smart Kid
School. The Smart Kid School, the Magnet School. Yeah. Now, speaking of things that people did without studying and humble brag and all that crap, I tested into Jefferson without a stitch of studying. And I only did it because there were like really driven kids. Oh, is it Kate Newhausen and Amelia Verosco that I knew were like being bred like racehorses to get across this finish line into that school? Don't get me wrong. I'm going to toss them under the bus in a second, but they had the last laugh. Like, they're doctors now and actually do things with their lives.
They're like literally doctors.
I believe at least Amelia is literally a doctor. Yeah. Yes. I don't know what Kate's doing. I'm sure it's something overachieving.
Yeah.
So they studied their asses off for this. I didn't study a stitch. Do you know why I did that test? I'll tell you why. It was a two-leg test, and the first time I took it, my parents agreed to buy me Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo for the Super Nintendo.
Turbo's legit.
It was. I mean, because I had to, if you remember, if you bought them when they came out, each one was $60. And then as soon as the second one came out, the first one was $20.
Right.
But like, you couldn't pay me to play that first one.
Right.
As soon as Turbo came out. And then Super came out and you had to have Super. So I had that. And the other time, like once you got through leg one, I think they gave you a second test or something like that. And I made them buy me Live S Binge and Purge, the Metallica Live box set.
The second part was teacher recommendation.
Was that it? Okay. Yeah. So then it was.
I did not have good recommendations.
Okay. Test out of algebra then was Super Street Fighter. Okay. And then for Thomas Jefferson was I got Live S Binge and Purge by Metallica. Okay. I remember. And so I got into the school and it was like I felt like I was one of those kids that resented being smart at the time.
Yeah.
Like, not that I ever got crap for it. Like, I was never beat up. Did you ever get harassment for being, like, kind of smart?
I worried about it in middle school. Middle school is the only time in my life where I was a little concerned, but that's just because little boys in middle school are mentally imbalanced, and they'll look for any reason to fight.
Okay. I never got into anything for being gifted and talented.
I didn't either, but I saw Matt McCary. Is it?
Oh, you mean Matt McFerry? Sorry, just...
Blonde kid, right?
I don't know. Matt McCary. I just remember we called him Matt McFerry. Okay. That's what you do. Middle school.
Sorry, there was that other Matt that we knew in high school that went to Chantilly.
Matt McCarron?
I think... Okay, so two different people.
Yeah.
I think it was McCary, right? McCary was the smart kid. His grandpa worked for National Geographic, something crazy.
Okay,
like
yeah, sure. I don't remember.
Smart kid. Really stubborn, always was willing to defend himself and like pick fights basically. And I just watched him get picked on for being a nerd, and he would just like double back in someone's face and he would like precipitate a fight really.
Yeah.
And so that was the telling lesson to me of like, don't throw that out there. There's no reason to. No good can come from like telling these other kids like, hey, guess what? I plan on, you know, whatever it
You'll
is.
You'll work for me someday.
Yeah. Don't do that.
No, I never got anything for that. And like, maybe it was because really quickly I started getting in trouble. Like, I thought that would even things out. I was like, well, I can be smart, but as long as I'm also a miscreant, what kid would beat me up? And then I became the idiot who was like picking on other people.
Yeah, we didn't hang out in middle school. For people who listen to the show regularly, you probably have heard the story that like John and I just have these periods of our lives where we don't talk for a couple years. And that middle school is one of them.
It was kind of a donut. Like, we've talked ever since for a certain...
On and off. Like,
yeah.
Because when you started college, like when we both started college at the same time, like we didn't talk for a couple years. So I mean, a little bit, but, you know, like
freshman year of college was tough.
So.
Well, I mean, yeah.
It's hard enough figuring out your own life. You didn't keep up with anyone
who wasn't at the school, I feel.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, I had, like, a little gay online relationship with this kid, Mike Vale, that we went to high school
with. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then, like, freshman year, like, for some reason, we would just IM each other all the time. Like, I wasn't friends with you before, but now suddenly we're hitting it off. This is bizarre. So, God, where the hell were we? Oh, testing into TJ, the smart kid school. And
right.
After being, I was a little F up, in all honesty. Like, I was among the earliest to do drugs. The only place where I didn't accept.
No. You can't just like put that out there like it was cool. Tell the people what the drugs were.
Well, okay. I started smoking cigarettes at like 12 or 13 and drinking at 12 or 13. And I was smoking weed like around 13-ish. And then what? You want me to talk about how I did cough syrup all the time?
What came first?
And rotted my brains?
What came first?
Pot.
Okay.
I'm not a complete psychopath.
But what did you like better come the end of high school?
Cough syrup by far.
Yeah.
The way cough syrup mixed with the amphetamines they had me on? Perfect. Perfect, man. Oh, God. So, back to the whole story, which I don't even know why we're getting to the bottom of this one. I don't even know what the bottom is. I wound up at TJ, and there were drama kids running around in bare feet and capes, quoting Romeo and Juliet and other Shakespeare's works. And I was like, holy F, I gotta get out of here fast. Like, I am a geek, and this is gay-tarded, to put it technically.
You were smart to get out of there, honestly. Like, people do need to beware of sending their kids there. I guess one lesson that's a takeaway from this, you remember usury, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, basically, and like Rich, I hate to call people out for this, but, you know, it's a pain to get to the magnet school, the magnet high school in Fairfax County, and half the people there are not even going to be able to get into UVA come the end of it. Because if you graduate in the bottom half at TJ.
Yeah, it was 400 kids, and 130 went to UVA and 100 went to Virginia Tech. Which, by the way, back then, Virginia Tech, that's where I wound up. It sucked back then. If you ever wonder why I love Mike Vick and will never attack Mike Vick, it's because his fast black ass made my time at Virginia Tech worth something on paper.
Yeah.
That school, if anyone from that school ever badmouths Mike Vick, you smack him for me. And you tell him to remember and to give thanks to that dog-killing son of a bitch.
You can always talk bad about Marcus Vick, though. He kind of...
He sucked.
He imploded the program that his brother built. He really did.
Yes. But what Mike Vick did, he single-handedly put Tech on the map, where people mentioned it in the same breath with UVA. Before that, it was a joke school. I remember what this whole Grandpa Simpson rambling was about.
Okay.
Senior year. Okay, freshman year. I'm sorry. Freshman year, I finally get to Chantilly. My grades, all Bs, which for me, given how my parents raised me, I might as well have had a slate of Fs. I had Bs except for speech and gym.
Yeah.
So I had two As there. The 3.28. I was happy with that. My parents, my immigrant parents, wanted to behead me.
Right.
And cut off my hands like a market thief. Sophomore year, they put me on Dexedrine for my ADD halfway through. I don't think I had lower than 100 the rest of the year. I got up to like a 3.5.
Right.
Junior year, I think I had a couple APs. I was one third of a grade away from a 4.0. I had something like 3.92. I had that ascent that you were describing in detail. It couldn't have been better. I got a perfect SAT score. You were 10 points off from one. You know what I mean? Like, we both couldn't have...
Well, that was the golden ticket, really.
Well, no, it doomed me. It was the golden noose for me.
Yeah. No, I think that
after
definitely
junior year,
you.
Here's what happens. I was like obsessed for 2 years with this the twin sister of our friend Andrew Ritz. Like, I had the biggest crush on Megan Ritz. Why are you making those eyes?
You've told me about this, but in adulthood, I didn't really like realize it extended back into high school as deeply.
It only existed in high school.
Oh, okay.
What, you think I'm still pining for Megan Ritz?
No, like a decade ago. I thought like right after college, you were kind of like, hey, Andrew, what's up? Where's your sister?
No. I mean, like, she had big, you know, she was nice up top. She's a sweet girl. So, yeah, I probably was still like, hey, what the hell?
Yeah.
But, I mean, by that point in college, I was actually, like, sexually active and not having to just eyeball chicks.
Right, yeah.
But, like, you know, sophomore and junior year, like, I was just like, I had this, like, puppy love thing.
Wow.
For her. And weirdly enough, I think it's her birthday today, according to Facebook.
Oh, you didn't just happen to remember that from the years of just etching it into your hand.
Just carving it into my flesh, yeah.
Didn't you just look down at your wrist to see, oh, it's Megan's birthday today?
Yeah, I had a prison-style tattoo. I took some guitar string and dipped it into Bic ink. Just dotted it. That's my wrist. You got me, buddy. No, I was like really, I don't know if you call it love when it's just completely one-sided.
Unrequited love.
Okay, yeah, yeah. I really had like as much as you can have a heart on at age 15 for a broad, like you don't really know what to do with it, but like I just dug the hell out of her. And I had, like you said, like unrequited
puppy love. How does
this
relate to you going to college?
Well, okay. So after junior year, that summer was like when all the smart girls, like the girls in regular ed classes kind of started effing the summer after sophomore year. We had a very like conservative school when it came to getting some.
Oh, yeah. That's because like there's a pretty low divorce rate, I feel, at our high school.
Oh, so you're saying like more divorced parents, more pads to screw at.
I hate to be a jerk, but I just feel like there were a lot of the girls you went to high school with had decent relationships with their fathers.
Ugh.
So sorry, man. Like it was bound to happen that a surprising number were just like, I'm gonna wait till I get to college because I don't want to stick a sex on me when I get home to my parents. Yeah.
I mean, all I can tell you is I lived the life of John Bender from Breakfast Club minus the sex in high school. And I did well in school. Like imagine academically excelling John Bender with zero sex. Like when Molly Ringwald's like, well, tell me about this girl, going through his wallet.
Yeah.
Just imagine none of that. Just imagine a wallet full of magic cards instead of pictures of girls you got some from. That was my life in high school. So end of junior year, that summer, all the smart girls decided to catch up to the slow girls, the regular girls. And a lot of them got their cherries popped. Like they met the guy that they dated for a year or two.
This is the guy that I will lose my virginity to.
Yeah. And they ended up getting banged out and then teamed up, you know, booed up with the guy for at least like a year or so.
Right.
It was always convenient. It seemed premeditated. You could do a year with this guy. And then when you had to break up because you went to college, you didn't seem like a slut, like a cock hungry slut.
Right.
You just wanted some more sweet college D once you got away from this guy. So junior year, Megan Ritz starts seeing Chris Blevins, a dude I knew from like my scouting days. And kind of like you,
I played baseball with Chris.
Yeah, I knew him as like a kid. I didn't really keep up with him when we were in high school. Well, one summer's day, we're like over at the Ritz household, me and my drug buddies, and Meg is hanging out with Chris, and then they like go upstairs, you know, to the bedroom area, the boudoir. And then they come down somewhat later, and like I was very innocent at the time back then. Like, I just almost didn't realize people my age could even screw. Like, I just didn't think that
really
was in the card. I was so dumb about sex.
Oh, wow, man.
I was so dumb about sex. So I stared at it.
I got keyed in because a couple people lost their virginity in middle school.
Really?
Yeah. You don't know people who, like, I mean, that's really early in my opinion, but I've met
several
people.
There was Vicky
who...
something or other, the slut. You know, like, there was always, like, one or two girls who were the Lucys. They lost their cherries in middle school. But
yeah.
That wasn't a normal
thing.
Well,
there were dudes as well. Don't be
there
hating on the
like
girls.
Dudes
who are
from the projects of Brookfield, like a mile from me. Like maybe
the projects. Shut up. It's a suburb, man.
Yeah.
Don't even.
No, they were just crappy little townhouses that we thought were
projects. Oh, townhomes. Their parents merely own townhomes.
Yeah. You sound like Rick James making fun of Charlie Murphy for the Navy. With his little pants, the Navy. I don't know. It was kind of cruddy compared to... I was just like, these homes are conjoined. What filth.
Dude.
They were a little rougher. They were a touch rougher.
You came to my row home in Baltimore, like...
That was the one place
no
I actually got
me.
Bullied. Well, yeah, now. Yeah. I work in the dumps of D.C. Yeah. A couple times a week. Are you kidding? Those houses are Shangri-La now. Yeah. What? So there's a quinceañera in your neighborhood every week? So what?
Yeah.
Good Lord. That's fine. Back then it was the turlet. So.
Oh, man.
So they come downstairs and like gears start clicking in my head. I'm like, wait, they're like together, but like not holding hands in the hall together. Like he just gutted that bitch out together. And I can't explain how numb I felt in that moment.
Wow.
Like, I could have seen a plane go into the Twin Towers, and I would have been like, yeah, but it wasn't like that time you realized the girl of your dreams was getting her cherry ripped out by that dude. And I was so depressed, Howard. I went into, it wasn't even like a conscious depression. And it took me a while to figure out why I was depressed, but that moment smashed me. I mean, smashed me emotionally. I had to get off drugs because every time I got high after that, I started having really bad trips.
Oh my god!
Like
gosh.
That is screwed with my head. Like I started listening to nothing but Depeche Mode, New Order, and The Cure.
I was wondering how you got into Depeche Mode. I always found that to be
summer.
An interesting and
that summer
Joy Division, right?
Joy Division, yeah. New Order, everything. Yeah, just a depressed British teen would need. That's what
always,
I got into.
That always stuck out to me because yeah, like I never really talked to you when you started getting those bands. I just figured your musical tastes were evolving and you were exploring new things. I didn't realize there was a motivation.
Well, no, it was so random. I started like just thinking of Enjoy the Silence and Personal Jesus like maybe a month before this happened. And I was at the used bookstore and I was like, yeah, I'll buy a copy of Violator for $350. And then this went down 3 weeks later and all of a sudden it was like, I need no other music except for this album. Let's buy their entire catalog, Black Celebration, You and I Have a Date. And the big thing when I knew my goose was cooked, every summer I would go off Dexedrine and I would plump up to 160, which, oh, would I kill for that now? Oh, would I kill for that?
You were horribly skinny.
Fat cruising speed.
In high school, you were under 140 because you were a vegetarian.
I was.
Taking
I was,
Dexedrine.
Yeah. So I'd go from 160 on the summers down to 138, which I thought was a hilarious weight because I listened obsessively to the Misfits. They have a song called We Are 138. So it all came together in my my drugged up head. I was like, got to stay at 138, buddy. And I plumped up to like 160 and I started taking Dexedrine and I lost not a pound. And then the school year rolled around and I had signed up for like 5 AP classes because I'm like, this is my ticket to wowing the colleges. And then I'm going to go off to school and who needs Megan Ritz? Because I'm going to be balls deep in that college poon. And I couldn't concentrate. It was broken. It stopped working.
I remember both of us made the mistake of taking 5 APs.
I only did it because you did, you son of a bitch. You and Jordan Chavez. You both took 5 APs. And I was like, I can't be dumber than those two.
I should have taken 4 in hindsight. It was fine taking 5. What I figured out by taking 5 is that I didn't want to be a scientist. Because physics was a good class, but all I learned in it was that I hate doing experiments. I'm just
not
an experimenting type.
Don't even get me started on that goddamn AP physics. We had Mrs. Euler that every...
Ms. Euler. Whatever. Remember, day one, she gave us a lecture on the proper prefix to her name.
Ms. can drink my jizz. I hated that bitch.
Really?
Yes. Every other kid got along with her. And she pulled me aside like day 3. Like I was rebel without a cause. And she was like, look, I understand you have to act like you're not really fitting in. And I wanted to just be like, bitch, look, I wear a Metallica shirt daily. I get it. My hair is long and looks like a squirrel's nest. I get it. I want to get an A in your stupid class. My pills aren't working. It has nothing to do with me trying to stick it to you. I'm just a goddamn retard right now. So lay off. I was not in a good mood about it. And the whole year, she just viewed me as this miscreant. And I was like, I view you as a crappy teacher. Get through my befuddled ADD brain. And I tanked physics. I tanked everything. I got my first academic D that year for a quarter. And like my grades the first quarter were something like a 2.0 average.
Wow.
And this is what I'm trying to get at. It stopped working. It was like that movie Limitless. The Limitless pill stopped working all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And my grades ate balls. And every school just looked at me and went, man, this guy who for 3 years had his S together, capped by a perfect SAT score, he really took off this senior year. We're not going to take a flyer on this chap. And I only got into Virginia Tech out of every school I applied to. And years later, people would be like, oh, Virginia Tech, that's a great school. That was the television repairman school when I was a kid. You didn't wish Virginia Tech on your worst enemy. When a kid said, well, I got into tech, you went, oh, you said that like they told you their sister was pregnant and she was 15. You went, Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I mean, back then, to be fair to the school, you could major in engineering or computer science.
Yeah, or milking cows. It was a goddamn veterinary, not even veterinary.
They have a veterinary school.
What is that called, though? Some agricultural sciences.
Yeah.
It was an agro science, yeah.
So, no, those were the big programs.
Yeah, it was a school. You won two things.
It wasn't a safety.
You
effed
up and wound up there. Oh, sure as ass, my safety. You effed around in my area and you wound up there, or you were the farmer's son and he sent you there to learn how to better milk a cow's titty.
I disagree with your assessment of Virginia Tech. I mean, it's not like the prize pig when it comes to getting into a public university in the state of Virginia, but it's a good school, man. It always has been. It's much more competitive. It's more competitive than ever.
You know
it's
what? Maybe
now,
my mom was just the snobby bitch of snobby bitches back then. Because I remember there was a kid that worked at a rental store, and he went to back when rental stores existed. To anyone who's like 25 and under, I'm sorry you didn't get that reference. The guy who worked at the Betamax factory, I might as well have said. All right. Guy worked at the tape video store, rental store, and he went to TJ. And I remember when she learned he wound up at Tech from TJ, and she came home, and he might as well have said that he raped and murdered a girl and was going to go away for 25 years. She was like, wow, he wound up at Tech. Like, that was a cautionary tale in my world. So, I mean, when I wound up at Tech, my parents, I don't want to say were broken, especially because my dad was a filthy immigrant.
Right.
You know, grew up during the German invasion, eating human flesh to stay alive. So he was like, do they have more than human flesh to eat at Virginia Tech? Then you have won, my son. You have conquered America. But my mom knew a thing or two about schools and was just like, ugh, you F up. Because that was always the wink and the nod thing in my life, Howard. I was always the screw up that always did drugs and like talked horribly, but I always got the good grades in the end. And that's how I kept the bitch off my back.
I got to ask, so, like, I didn't realize that was the only school you got into.
Only school I got into.
What schools did you apply to?
Well, everyone did Harvard as a joke. Brown, UVA, Georgetown. That might have been it. Like, and it was weird. I didn't take college seriously at all.
Yeah, because like, you applied to five schools.
A lot of, well, not just that. A lot of good schools were willing to give me free rides out of state based on just the score.
We got the same mail for national merit where
Auburn USC wanted to give me a free ride. I remember that.
Auburn wanted to give us free rides.
So you could have had sweet Southern Kitty, and I could have had L.A. movie producer Kitty.
Well, I went to Texas because they offered in-state and $1,000 a year. I was like, that's a pretty good deal. That's actually, that's cheaper than going to Virginia Tech.
You're smarter than me, my friend.
So I just saw that deal. I was like, they got a great football team. Actually, well, Ricky Williams had just won the Heisman, so mm-hmm. I was really excited. I love college football. So for me, I was just like, Ricky Williams is the man. I'm going to follow him to Texas. And that's why I applied there, and then I applied to Virginia Tech. Those are the only two schools, because I was like, if I get into Texas, I'm just going to go to Texas. So it was the first application I submitted, and then I said, you know, I should just make sure I have something in the bag just in case that doesn't work out. So I applied to Virginia Tech because the essay was optional back then. They were just like, you don't have to write an essay if you don't want. I was like, I won't. Check.
That's how big your balls were grade-wise, though. And that's what I'm saying. If you try, first of all, there's no optional essays anymore going to Tech. I guarantee you that.
Yeah.
Second of all, if there were and you checked no, they would be like, well, this saves me some time. Rip. And of course, now they don't even get physical things, I'm sure, right? Everything's done via email.
Pretty much, yeah. I think everything's
like
electronic.
I said, rip, like tactile paper is still used this day and age. God, I'm old.
But no, man, I mean, it's hard to get good guidance, I think. I actually had lunch not too long ago with Neil and our Latin teacher.
Oh, well, you would
about a year ago.
Neil Chakrabarty, who I once went to a Hare Krishna meeting with.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yes. He tried to save my lost soul, and I just ate the free food and then left. And yeah, K. Larry, you. One but Latin teacher extraordinaire.
I don't think you can underestimate how much of a limited perception we might have had with an immigrant parent. Because Neil had the same thing where it's just like, you had to have the right teachers or counselors come in and like give you good advice. And I think the reason I ended up in five AP classes didn't devastate my GPA the same way as you. But it was something that, while it didn't affect my college admissions, I feel like it affected my life because they told me to take another AP instead of what I really wanted to do, which was a Votech course on operating a video camera.
You wanted to back then?
Yeah.
I had no idea of wanting to do it. You know what I wanted to do with my life? Not go to school. That was it.
I wanted to do film a little bit. I thought it'd be cool to like work in the film industry. You know, I run a side business now where I produce films a little bit. And it's just, it would be nice if I had more experience in it instead of trying to pick that up when I was 30. So I look back at that opportunity and the fact that I was discouraged from trying to do things that were not pen to paper. And it's just, it's like, why did you deprive me of a skill? And it's because they all told me that you need to worry about your academic resume, blah, blah, blah. And at the end of the day, I went with somebody that sent me a letter saying this is a scholarship offer.
That's the problem, dude, with just, I think, smart people in general, especially with parents from our generation. My mom is older than yours, and my dad is like 10 years older than my mom, or was. But they just saw that they had smart kids. And this is what she's broken down for me since. She's like, I just had smart kids that like did well at academics. And like in my day, you would just excel at academics and that was it for life. So why wouldn't I encourage you to do that? Like there was no, I feel high school in general and college really, if you don't play your cards right, does nothing to prepare you for real life.
No, it doesn't.
Like you do it. And my whole life, I thought was you do things you hate. Because I had zero academic interests, in all honesty. So you do things you hate, and right. You get good marks in them. Again, you're gritting your teeth the whole time. You hate this. You just want to be listening to Slayer and getting high and watching Mr. Show reruns. And you go to college. And what do you do in college? Is it find something you want to do the rest of your life? Hell no. You do more things you hate and get good grades there. And then I really thought you just walked into places of employment holding out a report card. And said, all aces, buddy. I'll do whatever you want. And I can do it because I got these A's. And so you spent the rest of your life doing something you hated. Because you got those A's. And you proved
it. What a glistening picture you portray. Yeah.
Yeah. And you just sit there at your desk and you're like, boy, do I hate this. But I learned how to do S I hate my whole life.
I'm so glad you're bringing this up right before I go back to work for another person. I've been my own boss for... pretty much since 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And now I need more money. So I'm going to work for someone else now. And I thank you for reminding me of all these things that we once thought about, like the working world. Thank you.
Dude, I think you'll be fine. One, you're getting a good paycheck. Two, your boss probably isn't an ass. You're not going in a straight up office environment. I, to this day, remember the first time I got my only real office job. The only time where it was like, this is full time. It's not temp. You're not going to leave us in a week. You're just here for life.
Yeah.
You know, like when Homer has to go back to the nuclear plant because they have Maggie and he just knows that he'll never leave at that point. Right. That's how this was with me entering the work world. It's like, oh, this isn't you just getting a couple paychecks and then leaving. This is it for good. And by 10 a.m., I was just writing in a notepad, you will quit by the end of this week. You cannot endure. Like I had to go to the bathroom and just cry. Like a rape victim. Like I was like, this is horrible. Like I couldn't take it.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's not for everyone. What can I say? But
a few people like it, but yeah, just sucking it up and doing it is something that we all have to do at some point. And I'm back there. That's where I'm back. I was really hoping to stay independent, but you know.
Dude, just get paid. There's nothing worse than being broke in life. Like whenever I hear about the starving artist. One, you probably suck because someone would have bought your crap if you didn't. And two, having no money stinks because money is life, man.
I disagree with you.
Money is what lets people do whatever they want.
I absolutely disagree with you because I lived in the arts district of Baltimore. One of the reasons I moved there was,
it
was cheap.
They needed some money. If they had zero money, they would have died.
So I felt bad because I knew that like the fact that I could go from Baltimore to D.C. to make a lawyer's wage set me apart from the people who I lived amongst. It's just like I went there because it was affordable and I did have time to explore the arts. You know, the videography I'm talking about, this is what I was doing. I was working part time as a lawyer in D.C. and then living in like a crummy part of Baltimore amongst these artists just so like I could actually pick up some of this information. So... I really enjoy, I didn't meet a whole lot of people there, because I was back and forth in a long distance relationship, but, to the extent I did meet artists there, life is a process and you shouldn't have to necessarily endure, a negative experience if you can make less money and enjoy what you have, if that involves painting
absolutely.
All day.
I'm just saying make something. I'm saying don't be broke. So
it's, yeah, I mean, like, there, most of the people.
Maybe I have too many relatives that are into me. Maybe that's it. Maybe I've shown too much weakness and kindness because they're the same thing. And I got too many people that hit me up for too much to ever consider, like, not working again.
Okay.
I guess that's where I'm coming from. I was about to give you Vincent's speech to Jules about how without a job or legal residence, you'd be a bum.
A bum, yeah.
They got a word for that. Effing bum.
It's a bum.
Oh, what a fine film. All right. We've done enough. Where the hell did that come from? That was 40 minutes of the show. I don't even know what we talked about.
We just had to go back and talk college, man.
I feel like the full moon went down and like I stopped being a werewolf and I'm just covered in blood. And I've got human flesh in my belly. And I'm like, where was I? I really don't know what happened. But
yeah, I don't know why we took that trip down memory lane into high school, but it happened. It happened.
Yeah, I was going to just do these lighthearted segments. Like, I had diarrhea yesterday, and I had to blow off multiple people and say, like, I can't hang out with you. I don't feel well. And that sounds like such a cop-out. So then I went into detail, and I was like, yeah, I have horrible diarrhea.
Yeah.
And hopefully no one would think that's too much information, because to me, diarrhea is one of those things that, like, there's no disease that has more bad and more good to it. Like, if you are at home and you have diarrhea, up until, like, that fourth session, it's the funniest thing on earth.
What are you, like, talking about?
You don't love... I crack up. Like, when you go for that
That's
first
weird.
Round and you're just emptied, like, you sound like someone trying to get the last bit out of a ketchup bottle. Gross. It's just like... They're just getting the last drip of French's mustard out.
I don't enjoy that feeling at all. Like,
it's
not the
great
first time.
Until your rectum feels like it's going to prolapse. But that's like usually round three. And like until you've had to wipe so much that your ass is raw, like a runny nose gets raw. But like before that, the first couple of rounds are the best thing on earth. But if you have it on the road or someplace that isn't home base, there's nothing more embarrassing or inconvenient. Like, I as an adult have crapped my pants multiple times. And it's never due to intoxication. It's always been diarrhea doing her work. And, like, I'm talking real, like, hot lava down the leg, crap your pants. Or, like,
this is awful.
Or, like, you go in a pair of whitey tighties and it just fills it up. And suddenly it looks like you have the balls of a donkey inside your whitey tighties because it's just swimming with liquid brown. And you're like, thank God my fat little thighs have trapped this against the side of the underwear.
I'm kind of angry you didn't, like... I asked you what the topics for today's show were, and you wouldn't tell me.
Yeah, that's why.
And now I'm glad. Yeah. Now I'm glad we talked for 40 minutes about something that you didn't want to talk about. For a second, I felt bad.
Nah.
I don't feel bad anymore.
Nah, I just wanted to celebrate diarrhea.
Ugh.
Just pooing my lungs out yesterday.
I mean, I'll tell you this. Like, it's a horrible thing to talk about because, like, the vivid imagery, we all know what our own diarrhea looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've had a pet diarrhea is also really disgusting.
Oh, God. Oh, God, when you've got a dying cat,
ew.
And just every third one is one of those
ew.
On the carpet.
Ew.
Oh, you go from
ew.
Like, poor Misty, to move it along, Misty, real fast. Oh, there's nothing worse than pet diarrhea on a carpet.
So, like, with the band I'm in, we still don't have a name.
Pet diarrhea, there's your name.
I was thinking dog diarrhea is an excellent name for a band. Dog diarrhea, because it creates that vivid image in anyone's head who's owned a dog.
I like how the segment, this throwaway segment on our throwaway show, that's too much. But your entire band, you want to call dog diarrhea.
Well, it just grosses people out when they think about it. Because it's like, ugh. I remember the last time I had to pick up dog diarrhea.
There's nothing worse.
Yeah.
There's nothing. If that gets on the carpet,
I dry
burn your house down.
When my dog like has diarrhea and I try to pick it up, I guess I have to admit, there's nothing to pick up when it's dog diarrhea, so there's no point. But, you know, I've tried before in an attempt to, like, comply with the law, and it's just like, you can't pick up dog diarrhea. It's just, like, on the ground. And all that happens when I try to pick it up is that I dry heave for the next 5 minutes. It's horrible.
Oh, I can't pick up, like, hot animal excrement. Like, I'm okay. If I have a glove on, I can handle, like, a week-old cat turd coming out of a litter box, and that's it.
Oh,
and I pretend it's an acorn so I don't
vomit.
Oh, because they always do that. They just knock, like, the one little pellet that, like, fell off the end of the turd.
Yeah.
They'll knock that out of the litter box. And that one, like, at age 33, I'm mature enough to pick that up and just be like, but yeah, like, oh God, babies, just liquid poo in general. Allison, who's not really on the show that much anymore, like, she brought over a random baby the other day. We were supposed to record, and I don't know how she thought we were going to record or the baby. Yeah, just watching a friend's baby.
She had a baby seat in her car?
I don't know. Maybe just sat on her lap. Yeah. I really don't know.
Did she West Virginia in and just had the baby on her lap while she drove into town?
Yeah, trying to avoid burning it with her Newport. Yeah, she's tearing down the road, flicking out the window at 70 miles an hour. Ash just flies in the baby's soft tinder hair.
It's really hard to steer, hold a baby, and drink a beer while you're running down the interstate in West Virginia. That's for sure.
You just teach the baby to hold it in its little fat hands, tilt the beer. Tilt, baby, tilt! But she brings this kid over, and the kid was fairly silent, but like, and I didn't smell anything, but she's like, maybe you need a changing. And then she puts the kid on its back and opens the diaper. And it was like it had a bikini made out of S that it was wearing underneath. Ew. I've never, like, I immediately wanted to gouge my eyes out, Oedipus style. And not only that, do you know the mechanics of cleaning out a baby girl? Like, you take a baby wipe and you're just digging poop out of their snatch. There's nothing grosser on earth, dude. Ew. She's just sitting there like, wee-key, 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 like the way you dig dog crap out of the treads of a boot. Oh, that's what, man, she has to do with poop out of this baby's puss. Oh, it was the worst thing I've ever seen. Not only that, like, the baby's vag was like the size of the baby. Like vag just doesn't grow with the rest of the body, geez, or something. This baby had a gigantic gash. And it was like 3 months old.
I can't believe you wanted to leave with this.
That was the worst thing
you wanted to leave with this.
Yeah, it would have been. I mean, what the hell's up with that? I know when you're a baby dude, you have like baby dick. You have nothing. Why does like a baby girl have this huge vag?
We need to stop. Have you ever seen Inside Amy Schumer?
No.
Really? Okay, no. I started watching it recently.
I saw her stand-up. Like, my girlfriend loves her stand-up.
You're so not a fan, or?
I'm not big on stand-up, period, if we're being blunt here.
Because she had Jim Norton on an episode recently.
Multiples, and Bob Kelly. Like, she tries to work in everyone. She's very cool about working in her comedian friends who could use a leg up, if you will. Or
yeah. No, I was curious if you were familiar with her since you're such a big fan.
Absolutely.
Of Jim.
She used to be on the Opie and Anthony show, which it was in the day, like fairly often. And then she blew up and it was like kind of like when Louis got huge. All of a sudden it's like, hey, once a year we have them in and it's a very special occasion.
Right.
As opposed to, oh, it's Thursday, Amy's stopping by.
Right.
Yeah. No, I saw her, one of her stand-up specials. And then there was like one thing she did where it was like her and three other chick comedians, just like three Jewesses and a black broad.
Yeah, she's...
That should have been the name of the special.
She's pretty funny, man. I don't know. I'll give her some cred.
She's not bad. In terms of, especially, you know, to earn my sexist card here, in terms of a girl comic, she's very funny.
But she's great at like bodily function humor. That's one of my favorite things about like watching her show. I'm just like, she loves a good poop joke.
Yeah. She's good at it. She's very much like one of the dudes, if you will. I don't know. I enjoyed her, especially compared to, there was a girl that came on again, ONA, maybe like, God, 18 months ago at this point, Isla Fisher. Not Isla Fisher. That's Borat's wife.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Lisa Schlesinger, something like that.
I don't know.
She has a special on Netflix called War Paint.
Okay.
And she's like fairly put together. So the cover is pretty much her naked, but like covering her boobs.
Okay.
Let me see if I can. War Paint stand up special. Eliza Schlesinger? Okay, I'm pretty close there. And let's get you. Okay, there's the cover image. Not a bad looking woman, man. I'm not saying she's a brick house, but anytime you have some sort of boob and you're not fat and you got a decent dome piece, you're a good human being. But she was good on the show, and the chick tossed on war paint and was like, I find this hilarious. As she puts it, it's a sassy blonde, because she's blonde and has like this weird blonde pride thing going on.
Mm.
So anytime like a blonde chick does something, She's like all behind it. Like, I don't know how she derives any enjoyment from Gilmore Girls. That's just like a double pumper of brunette pride right there. But yeah, I watched that. I certainly, that made Amy Schumer look much funnier by comparison. Like, Isla's shtick, at least back then, was just doing this weird animal voice, like talking like this. And like, she did a bit on the, oh God, the Sarah McLachlan animal ads. Yeah. And that was like 10 minutes of her set. And I'm like, if there's one hacky, done to death thing, you know, like, that deserves to be 15 minutes on air. Like, I remember when Patrice O'Neill did it on ONA and he hit it out of the park. You'll never hear anything funnier. Just look up Patrice O'Neill talks about the Sarah McLachlan animal abuse ads. It's the funniest thing on earth, but that's all it deserves to be. Like, to do that, if you do it as like a nightly thing, as part of your act when you're traveling, I get it, but to be like, this is part of my special, it just seems hokey, man. And, you know, good, she's got a career and she's hot. Like, I'm not assailing her from any point of equality here, but it was lame, man.
Yeah. I heard an interesting comment from Jim on Amy Schumer's show, though.
Oh, Norton, what did he say?
Yeah, he said that he doesn't ever, he meant it, because they were talking about getting road tail, you know, when they're on the stand-up circuit going through, like, Podunk, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
I can't remember who said it. One of the guys had a great story where he just, his shtick would be in these small towns, he'd, you know, meet like a middle-aged woman who seemed to just have the night off from taking care of her kids, you know, just divorced lady, and get her into the car, basically say like, hey, if you don't mind, I will
kill you if you don't sleep with me.
No, so like he'll strike up the conversation, he'll get in the car and he'll just say, hey, I'd really like to just masturbate while we make out, if that's okay. And he said, without fail, he always got a Hummer, because no woman is just going to, like,
no
let
woman
you masturbate.
Would ever be okay with that.
Yeah, and that's what they were talking about, where it's just like, yeah, it's such a devious way to get what
that
you really want.
That is such brilliant.
Yeah, and it's just like,
oh,
it worked
God.
Every time, because it's like, you don't have to touch it, I'll do it.
That is up there with Alexander chopping the Gordian knot in two. That is brilliant. Because I'll say this, I'm the dummy who didn't figure that out, and I can't tell you how many times I've been humping a girl in a condom, and I'm just like, this will not end until I, like, finally jack myself off.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've just deadened my dick from beating it too much. And if they're, like, you want to picture how bored I was come AP Latin 4 years into a language that, like, I couldn't speak at the level you should have 2 weeks into the first year,
right,
much less 4 years down the pike. That's what their eyes look like as they just watch me and I'm furiously tugging it once the condoms come off. I'm like, hold on, it's almost coming, it's almost there. And they might as well be tapping the glass on a watch.
Wow.
Like, they're just like, oh, this is my life. I'm looking at these fat bosoms and this fat gut hanging over me as this guy is supporting his weight with one arm and just jacking it with the other on top of me.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, where did it all go wrong?
Man.
That's their
man.
Epiphany moment.
Yeah. Oh, that's horrible.
They're like, if this is step C, what did I do wrong A to B?
Oh, man. Sorry, but telling you about Jim. Jim's comment that I found real interesting was he doesn't try to sleep with female comics on the road. He's like, he really was honestly just focused on the idea of going after, like, chicks in the audience. But, you know, if he's ever...
That makes sense to me.
Okay. I just wanted your take on that, because that professional...
Oh. Well,
the professional comedy circuit actually is surprisingly professional in that sense, I feel.
Well, he might not do it on the road, but I know for a fact for a couple of years he was dating Chelsea Peretti, who's a comedian.
But they're dating, man. That's not just tail.
Yeah. Okay, he's dated multiple. I know of at least two chick comedians he's dated in the business. But Jim Norton's weird sexually, too. Like, he won't do that one night stuff because he loves hookers. Like, I feel when you've really established that hooker rapport, you almost have a better perspective on women. Again, this will get me lynched by no one because we have no listeners. But I feel when you're not quote-unquote woman poor, as it were, and you can divorce, like, actually wanting to spend time with a chick outside of just sleeping with her, because if you need just the sex, you can pay for it,
right,
and you've got that part figured out. I think that might actually make you better as a dude when it comes to selecting mates, because you're not just like, wow, I haven't had my pipes drained in 9 months, and this girl touched my dick. That immediately puts her to the top of every list I have. So I don't know. Maybe it gives him more perspective. Maybe he's able to just be like, it's not worth it. And you have to feel, unless they're new to the business, a female comedian going to have her guard up, because no way she didn't get pounded out once or twice by a comedian touring with her and learn the hard way that the guy would probably peace out at the end of things, or would like try to sleep with her and then later in the night try to bang a fan.
Right.
And maybe he's just noodled out that, like, you know, they don't have their defense up. Girls in the audience, that is, like, they're fans of mine. I can just walk in and within 2 minutes we can be cutting to business.
I almost feel like it's more of a, I mean, it's obviously like a personal choice where he feels like that's a morally correct thing to do. But I also feel business-wise, it just makes sense not to sleep with female comics if you're
a dude. Don't sleep with them poorly. If you can do them and really give them a good time, that's not a horrible decision.
No,
don't
but
be
you
like,
need
oh,
to,
that guy made me cut my brains out.
You can't have it end poorly, man. You can't date somebody and then have it go awry, because you guys are overlapping on audiences. And you can't have a bad reputation among female comics, because their audience is different than your traditional, and you're trying to reach more people if you want to make it. So I don't think it's a good idea if you're a male comic going around trying to sleep with every chick on the circuit, because you're going to get a bad rep with them, and they're not going to help you land that like additional fan base that doesn't really show up unless they're certain that there's a funny woman coming on the stage.
Yeah, I think you have to have kind of a frail ego to be like, oh, I'm really making it. Like, this is so much better than sleeping with just some random fairly attractive woman from the audience, because you're gonna have a hot and damaged woman who's on stage. Like, your average chick comedian, the ones that make it are at least mildly attractive, and obviously they're dinged up in the head somewhat if they're going to be into the field. But you know what, get the hotter chick who's so dinged up in the audience that she can't even get her act together long enough to put it together in a stage performance.
I don't think people really put it together that consciously, though.
Yeah,
I think it really is just, you know, a lot of dudes are just donkeys, and they're just like, hey, you were really funny. What clubs are you working next week? You want to bang before the show? You know,
I get wanting to stick it in any attractive coworker. And like at that office job I mentioned that I had for 2.5 years, that was the one thing I did that was great. I effed everybody. Oh, everyone came to my house. We all drank. I played with more tits of coworkers at that place.
Wow.
Oh, that was fun. But and even then, like when you had to walk around and it was quote unquote awkward, no, it wasn't. It was like this dirty secret you shared with them. And then when they hated your guts, if everyone liked you, they're just like, yeah, why doesn't that bitch like being effed over by you? You're great, John.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, yeah, you're right. Let's bum another cigarette and go outside. Talk about how awesome I am. Where's the new girl? You know, it was just like this cycle. It was fun, man. I don't know. So yeah, screw Jim Norton. Bang your coworkers is great. He's wrong. The last thing we wanted to do, we got about 6-7 minutes left in the show. You had mentioned while we were urinating together romantically, crossing streams, there was a show, Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce.
It's a new Bravo show. Yeah, Bravo's first foray into scripted television.
So Bravo, every cable channel has abandoned everything they've ever held dear. It just become reality TV with a smattering of scripted, I guess.
Bravo's always only had movies and their reality-type TV shows, because they were pioneers in reality TV, really.
Were they?
Yeah.
What did they do? I thought Survivor was the first reality thing.
Well, that's the first, obviously. Okay. But they've been more committed to documentary-style programming.
Are they the RuPaul show?
I don't know.
Bravo?
They might be.
God,
yeah.
Man, you didn't know that? I figured you were a safe bet for knowing what the hell Drag Race was on.
No, but they started
Bravo.
Project
Bravo's
Runway.
Bravo's the limperest channel.
Bravo did,
to put it PC-like,
Top Chef and Project Runway. Those are their two.
Is Iron Chef Bravo?
No.
What's Iron Chef?
That's Food Channel.
Okay.
But yeah, Bravo's actually now trying scripted programming. They want to set themselves apart, because when they were cut above everybody else in reality TV, they could really rely on having that set them apart. But now that everybody does reality TV, because it's so cheap to produce, they're finally going to enter the ring for original programming, which is how they got Cuddy from House to play the...
Is she the lead?
She's the lead.
Oh, I wanted to... Lisa Edelstein.
Lisa Edelstein.
I always had the steamies for her. Just because, like, when House was on, she was, like, mid-40s. And she was holding it together, man.
Oh, yeah. Dude, pilot episode, she gets banged out by a dude in his 20s.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds jackable. Utterly jackable.
Are you, speaking of female comics, are you a Janine Garofalo fan?
No.
All right, she is in the show.
She does she play her sour bitch persona?
Yes, she's an attorney. She's a divorced attorney. But
so much range to that woman. You watch Romy and Michelle. You watch Larry Sanders. She's always bitter and little. Does she smoke and drink coffee?
I don't think she smokes. Actually, it's the tall, leggy blonde friend who's a bit of a hippie. This is all based in L.A.
Uh-huh.
It's the pilot episode just establishes that Lisa Edelstein and her husband are about to get a divorce.
Okay.
And she has these two divorced friends, one of which is Janine Garofalo, and then they have this other friend who's a like model type who does whatever she wants. So she smokes in stores because, you know, they let the leggy blondes out in L.A. do whatever they want, apparently.
Yeah.
So.
They let them do that or here, too.
So, yeah, no, this is the setup of the three friends, and it's going to be a process as she gets divorced because she just published a book. Lisa Edelstein's character has just published a book about how great her marriage is. But it's really, after the book was published, the marriage really fell apart quickly. They were having problems before, obviously, but it was since then that they really made the decision to get separated. And they did their best to try to get through her book tour as if they were happily married. But she just loses control of everything and
is
just blurts it out.
Is this in the pilot or this is the whole season?
This is
what?
The pilot episode. Basically, okay. She lets it out at a Barnes & Noble event in the first episode that she and her husband are just basically done now.
Okay.
That she basically wishes he were dead.
Nice.
So, yeah. that's the pilot episode. And so now she, as a writer who's got a huge following of women who are like, she made me believe in marriage again, are all really pissed at her. And so she's relying on her two friends and now having to deal with her ex-husband or soon-to-be ex-husband as they're trying to figure out how to get divorced. So I think it's called The Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce because her previous books were like the Girlfriend Guide series about a range of like topics where marriage is awesome. So I think the show is pushing now where you follow her through her divorce and then probably at the end of the season, she'll put out a book called The Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce.
This is like getting marriage advice from Magic Johnson circa 89. And then you learn that he was just AIDS deep dicking around behind Cookie's back the whole time.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting concept because I don't think there's enough shows on television where you have a focus on divorced characters and like the difficulties that go along with
not
it.
Really
they're actually having fun with it. It's comedic, believe it or not. So there are enough laughs in the program.
They know their audience. Like there is this untapped demo of like women 40 onward or like late 30s that show is cashing in on. Are you familiar with Hot in Cleveland at all?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right, King Queen.
Betty White, man. Come on.
Yeah. I watch it. Well, I don't watch it, but I walk in on my mom watching it a lot.
Oh, I didn't know they still make it.
They're airing it. I'm pretty sure it's still on at the very least in reruns. But yeah, it's got what's her name, Wendy Malick.
Yeah.
From what was she on? Just shoot me. Oh, it's Just Shoot Me. Yeah. Okay. And then there's Jane Leaves from Frasier.
Yeah, Valerie Bertinelli.
Valerie Bertinelli. It's just broads who are like in their 50s and change,
yeah,
going through all this crap. And some of them still look kind of screw. I'd still do Wendy Malick. What the hell? She's like 65. You'd have to take a razor blade to the middle of her Spanx to get some play. But once you open that up and made sure everything else was held in place, I'm sure it would be fun. I don't know. Could you go that old? Could you do a chick like 60 and above?
I don't know. Maybe. What, like Valerie Bertinelli? I mean, my complaint about Valerie Bertinelli has always been that she looks a little too much like Eddie Van Halen. Like, I never understood why they were married because I'm like, you basically just married.
Forget Wolfie. Look at, I'm sorry, forget Eddie. Look at Wolfie, her big fat kid. Like, oh, you see Valerie all over that. You just see Wolfie with his big boy bosoms between the strap of his bass on stage. Yeah, you see that. You'll never touch Valerie Bertinelli. Wolfgang Van Halen. God damn.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, there have to be some older female celebrities where they just get, like, credit for time served, where it's just like, you back in the day.
Yeah, yes. Oh, Susan Sarandon. You just climb on top of and be like, think of Rocky Horror. Think of Rocky Horror. Think of a really hot daughter. God, her daughter's the queen of the butterfaces.
Really?
Oh, my God. What? Hold on. Let me.
I won't go that far, man. Damn. That's harsh.
She does not. Okay, hold on. What's her name?
She's looking pretty smoking in
Eva
Murray. Californication? She was looking pretty smoking.
Yeah, because she had huge tits. huge, huge. I cannot downplay how large Eva Amuri's bosoms are. She does not have the best dome. I'm sorry. It's not bad, but she's got a weak chin. She's got a little Simpsons chin. Or it's just lips that go into a neck.
Yeah.
Oh, the milkers on that woman. Good Lord. God, she could smoke anywhere. She could put a cigarette out of my goddamn eyeball. I wouldn't care. All right, let's wind this one up. I think we ran a little long. The sound elements. There we go. There, yay. All right, this is Papa's Basement. I'm John Papa Giorgio, joined by Howard Flood. If you like the show, inpapasbasement.com is the show's site. Every show that we've ever done is hosted there, as well as my writing, which I'll be getting back into at some point, I hope. All the social media stuff is there as well, but for the majority of it, I'm on there as at Papa's Basement. If you do any sort of iDevice, use the podcast app to find Papa's Basement, P-A-P-A apostrophe S, as well as Papa's Football Podcast, the football show we do. Like it, review it, subscribe to it. That's really what helps us out a lot. The Stitcher app as well has the shows, both of those shows under the same name. So again, like, subscribe, review. Last but not least, I do the Spookies comic with a friend of mine. It's at thespookiescomic.com. That's the URL. Check that out. Oh, and pfpod.com is the football show's website. I guess that's it, Howard.
Yeah, we're good, man.
All right, till the next one. We're out of here.
We're home free. School's out, baby.
Good show.
Nothing to talk about. Nothing to critique. Great show. Great guest tomorrow. You go home, have a glass of wine, whack off. I'll see you tomorrow.
That's the post-show critique?
Yeah, you're the best.
It's my time to go. I successfully burned all my bridges. Nobody loves me, and I don't love nobody.
Then he said penis.
Yeah. Then he said masturbation.
Then he said vagina. That was cool.
Had a mighty hard time, but I'm on my way. Had a mighty hard time, but I'm on my way. It's a mighty hard climb, but I'm on my way.